welcome back to the Conflict Skills Podcast. I'm your host, professional mediator Simon Good. In today's episode of the podcast, I'm going to be talking about what you should do if you're caught in the middle of conflict between two colleagues. Stuck in the middle, it can be an incredibly uncomfortable and quite challenging situation to be, especially when we care about the other people that are involved, whether that's because, you know, we like them and we want to support them and we actually do want the best for them. Or there might be some type of a personal motivation, like we're aiming for a promotion and we don't want to put this particular person offside. Or it might just be that you are completely under the pump and flat out and overwhelmed with just how busy you are. And what you're actually wanting to do is to limit the amount of involvement that you have in this ongoing drama between these two other people. And guess what? They might be doing their very best to invite you in and suck you in and, you know, do things, I guess, to enlist you as an ally against the other person. So in the episode today, I'll be talking about some of the strategies that we can use. And I've broken the, content that I'll talk about down into three different areas. At the beginning, I'll talk about, well, how do we think about these kind of situations? Given the fact that in a lot of these scenarios, you do probably want to demonstrate impartiality. So you would like for them to view you to some extent as impartial, especially if you're literally stuck in between conflict between two friends at work, for example, or two members of your team who are at odds. I'll also talk about what kind of support can be helpful. I'll explain the GROW model of coaching that you could use to empower the people involved rather than you getting sucked into rescuer mode or problem solving mode yourself. And then finally, I'll talk about some options for establishing and holding on to boundaries, particularly when you're dealing with people who are quite likely, I guess, to be not 100% happy with whatever the outcome is of the conflict, which might be that it's never resolved and there's just this ongoing tension and almost a sense of feeling like you need to walk on eggshells around the other person and that kind of thing. Or maybe there is some kind of a conclusion, like perhaps there's an investigation going on at work about an allegation of bullying or something. And when that concludes, in many situations, one, or to be frank, a lot of the time, both of the people are pretty unhappy with the outcome. And what can happen is that it's a little bit like dealing with someone who's very desperate, like they're drowning. And they'll grab you and drag you under. So I think thinking about how to establish boundaries when you're supporting people who are going through conflict themselves is also important, because if you're not clear on this, either internally in your head in terms of what you're predicting and how you're preparing and planning, or how you're communicating with the other person, you're likely to inadvertently become involved. And in a lot of situations, there's a cost for this, whether it's just time or it might be stress. Or maybe it does impact on your relationship with the other person. So let's think first then about what kind of relationship that we want to have with the people that are involved. This is often a really helpful starting point as you're considering what to do about a conflict situation. And for me, I usually break it down into the normal three stages that I use for conflict planning, which is predict, plan, and prepare. In other words, what do you think might happen? What kind of support or involvement do you think that the parties are looking for from yourself? What would they ideally want? How would they respond if you push back or offer some type of a compromise? Like, I can't come and speak on your behalf, but if you'd like, I'd be happy to meet with you and go through some options of the best way for you to put forward your views. So how impartial do I need to be between the two people involved? That would often be based on my relationship with the two of them. Like, I might be closer to one or the other. But there would also be things like my career. Do I want to apply for a promotion in the short term? Is this particular person connected to me in a project that's reasonably high stakes, so I don't want it to go pear-shaped and get off track? I really need to pause and think about that, because especially when you're first hearing about the conflict, it's likely that you're only hearing one person's perspective. In a lot of situations, this starts by one person whinging about the other one, having a complaining session about the other person. And if you're an empathetic kind of person and you want to be supportive, the risk there is that you might accidentally get sucked in. And it's not even, like when we think about this topic, impartiality, it's not even that you've done anything that has actually taken sides. the risk is that the other person will view you as having taken sides. So when we think about impartiality, for me, I'm thinking about how much impartiality do I need to demonstrate and how would I do that? If I'm spending an equal amount of time with the two people involved, for example, or I want them both to have a chance to talk it through with me and have their say, then I would make that explicit. I would say to the people involved, thanks very much. I appreciate you sharing your perspective. You know, just to be transparent, given the fact that I'm friends with both of you, you know, I'm still offering them a chance to touch base and grab a coffee if they like. But that doesn't change the fact that I can understand where you're coming from. And your perspective, given your experiences, it does seem like a particularly challenging situation for the two of you involved at the moment. So I'm empathizing and normalizing, like, this is your problem to deal with, and I'm not prepared to cut the other person off, for example, which might be something that the other person was either, you know, consciously, like deliberately looking for you to do, or maybe subconsciously that might be something that you expect. And for you, clarifying the expectations can mean that you avoid them feeling like you've let them down or, you know, betrayed them. It sounds a little bit overly dramatic, but I do think that's probably how people might feel if they've just had a big debrief and, you know, shared their heart with you, and then you go and talk with the person that they're in conflict with straight away. So you'd think about that in terms of the language. I like phrases like, okay, that makes sense given your experience, or okay, I can see how you see things, or that makes sense given your take on the situation. Given your experiences, this is how you see it, and this is what you think would help moving forward. So I'm demonstrating empathy there. I'm saying, it sounds like for you this is what's going on. Have I got that right? But I'm attributing it, so to speak, to them. This is how you see things. It sounds like from your perspective, this is what's going on. Have I got that right? And it's your perspective. This is what you think is going on. This is your take on the situation. This is what you think needs to happen moving forward. It sounds like you'd really like them to do this differently. And from where you sit, it seems like they're being completely ridiculous. I really like that because it fully lets us lean in and connect with the other person. And I think in a lot of situations, helps them almost to gain clarity around their challenges, whether it's they might have been minimizing it and, oh, I'll be right, I'll just push forward. And then you saying, hey, this sounds pretty full on. That might be a chance for them to pause and be like, oh yeah, this is pretty significant. Maybe I need to do something different about this. Or at the least, it might help them to know that you've taken it seriously, so that then when you give them advice or maybe say no or put up some boundaries, it will often be received differently. Whereas if they think that you haven't taken the time to understand their perspective, then of course they won't feel that same level of engagement. And if you've drifted more into the sympathy side of things, you poor thing, that sounds so challenging for you, that's really unfair, you should have been given more support, then what tends to happen is that it can decrease the other person's motivation for changing their behavior. And for me, most of the time, my goal is to empower them to manage the conflict, especially when I'm a mediator. It's literally not my job to come in and solve it for them. So that kind of language and phrasing can be particularly useful. You might also think about impartiality in terms of the actual structure itself. Now, I use that formal word structure because I'm thinking about a workplace situation, and maybe you've got a meeting with one of the people involved, like a one-on-one meeting. Well, in that case, you might consider organizing a one-on-one meeting with the other person as well. And the reason for that is that we want the process itself to be balanced. Like, we want the process itself to seem like it's been fair. And I don't know if a process can be impartial or not, but it should allow each of them equal opportunity for things like having their say, for example, or providing evidence if it's more of a formal process, or even just having a whinge if it's just your two friends who are upset about something that's happened. And I think a lot of the time people don't mind if you say, look, you know, I wanted to give you both a chance to have your say. Something like that. Like, I wanted to be fair. I wanted to be balanced. I wanted to give you both a chance. When we use that kind of language, it's often quite difficult for the other person to argue against. And if they do, well, I thought you were my friend. I suppose then we can lean in and say, oh, okay, it sounds like for you, part of being a friend would be not speaking to the other person that you're in conflict with. And I'm sorry, that's not necessarily something that I had in mind. You know, maybe we could talk it through and make sure we're on the same page moving forward. So I'm really careful to say, it sounds like you thought this was important. Have I got that right? Before I say no, or I say yes, or however I decide to respond. But what I'm aiming for, where possible, is to keep the actual structure, my communication, the amount of meetings, and the way that the conflict or issue is dealt with itself as balanced and fair to the people involved as possible. The next thing that you could consider is the kind of support that you'd like to give the two people that are involved. Now, for me, my default typically is to take an approach that has three stages. One is de-escalation. So our first step is to calm them down. I've got a number of episodes coming up, actually. I think I'm going to do three or four, looking at an overview of my de-escalation skills training and then a number of different examples. So if that's something that's useful for you, please let me know. And I'll really make sure that I prioritize that for a future episode of the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can shoot me an email. It's podcast@simongood.com. So podcast@simongood, so SIMONGOODE.com. So that's my starting point, is de-escalation. And what I'm wanting to do is to minimize the amount of perceived threats, establish a situation that feels more calm and contained, which helps me and the other person to be more composed. And I tend to find that that's almost a fundamental prerequisite step that's needed before we shift the conversation towards problem solving and future focus. Especially when the other person's really stuck in the middle, it can be quite a jarring experience to say, yeah, I understand all of that, I've got that, but, you know, what can you do about this? I mean, it is so unnatural, I think, that the other person might even become resistant and unfortunately argue about or more reasons why it's all the other person's fault and they're not the one that actually needs to change here. Whereas if we lean in and say, gosh, that sounds really challenging, it sounds like this is going on, and for you, you've really tried this and it hasn't worked because this has happened, and now it sounds like you're feeling really stuck, you're aware of the fact that you'd like it to be different, but there's no obvious options that might help. Have I got that right? So it's just normalizing it. It's saying, this sounds like a really challenging context to be in, and you've put in a lot of effort, and it hasn't worked out the way you've expected, and that probably feels really, you know, whatever, exhausting, challenging, frustrating, draining, whatever it is that they're feeling. And then I think we can shift the conversation towards, what do you think would help in the short term? That coaching approach, what do you think would help, tends to be the way that I deal with these situations, whether it's workplace conflict and it's two colleagues that are at the same level as me, or it's my team and I'm wanting to support my staff members to be better at dealing with conflict, or even with my friends, I still find the coaching approach works best. What do you think would work? What do you think would help? The reason that I like that approach is because it prevents me from getting stuck with the responsibility for solving the problem. I tend to be a reasonably, I think, like solution-focused kind of person. I mean, everybody probably says that they are, but for me, like if my wife says, oh, I'm going through this challenge at work, the first words that want to leap out of my mouth almost is, why don't you do this? Now, I've learned gradually, slowly over the years not to jump in advice-giving mode straight away, but that is what my brain likes to go to. And so when I'm debriefing and I'm talking to somebody else who's dealing with conflict, my impulse almost, it's like a reaction that comes up at a subconscious level is, you need to do this. Why don't you do this? Have you told them this? You really do need to think about this. And if I jump into that advice-giving mode too early, it can increase their defensiveness and resistance, as I've said. I'll say, I think this would work, and then they'll argue the other side. That would never work, or I've always tried that, or easy for you to say, you're not the one that's involved. Or it might suck me into the rescuer. That's a fantastic idea, Simon. Would it be okay if I organize a meeting and you can let them know that face to face? Oh, no, you've put it so well. I'd prefer you to communicate it directly than me talking about it with them. And then before you know it, I'm stuck into the drama and I've got an extra headache to deal with. For me, the coaching approach that I tend to prefer is GROW, G-R-O-W. So it's an acronym that stands for Goal, Reality, Options, and Way Forward. And I find this model is particularly helpful when we're considering a context like conflict, because there's often no easy answers. It's not a quick fix. It's not like, oh, you should have ticked this box in the website, go back and do it again, and it should be right. It's often more of this wiggling worm of stress and problems, and both of the people are perceiving the situation differently. So I'm reluctant to come in with too much of a prescriptive advice-giving type of approach. I mean, I'm a professional mediator. I have a degree in psychology. I have an MBA. I've got postgraduate training in dispute resolution. And nevertheless, I'm still reluctant to jump in and say, this is what you should do. Now, that doesn't stop me from wanting to say that. Of course I want to, but I really need to almost deliberately prevent myself from doing it. Because when we're supporting someone through conflict, one of the best things that we can do is to empower them to manage the situation. Because then it has two layers of benefit. It does help them to navigate this wiggly, messy worm of conflict that's hard to put your finger on exactly what's going on. And it's probably a whole bunch of complex moving pieces that are all connected here, including our history and our upbringing and our conditioning and the way that that affects our perception and our memory and all the rest of it. But it also helps them to navigate the next conflict that they're going through. If we jump in and solve the problem for them, then next time there's a problem, they're going to call us and say, hey, Simon, now what should I do? You know, that was really helpful advice you gave me last time. Now I'd like to run this next scenario by you. Whereas if we empower them, it ironically, I think, frees us up because we're not experiencing that level of expectation and what can I think almost develop into a little bit of a dependency sometimes. So if we were to use that model, the grow, goal, reality, option, and way forward, the idea is that we can ask questions around each of those four different categories. Goal questions might be things like, how would you like things to be between the other person? Gosh, it sounds like given everything that's happened, things probably can't go back to the way that they were. But what do you think would be a realistic working relationship, even if you weren't ending up, you know, being friends like you were a year ago? So realistically, what are you hoping for? What kind of working relationship would be needed between the two of you? When you say that they're being particularly unreasonable, what would you like them to do differently? How would you like to be able to communicate with them? And it sounds like for you, you're aware that you'd need to keep more distance. What would that look like? We're not telling them the goal. We're asking them the right questions that gets them to consider the goal. So it doesn't really matter what the goal is, if you know what I mean. It's establishing the foundation for their motivation and a little bit of a direction that you can use to check whatever the plan is or whatever the action is that they're coming up with against. Reality questions would be drilling into the current situation. When you say that the conversation went pear-shaped, what happened? When you say that they were completely unreceptive to the feedback that you tried to give them, even though you were just trying to help, how did that meeting begin? When did you start to notice that they were getting more resistant? When you say that they were being defensive, what did they say? So we're really drilling down to that granular level, like what were the actual words that they used? Who else was there? How long was the meeting for? What were you doing before you went into that meeting? And our goal is to increase the level of awareness in the other person. It's not so much for our edification that we want to understand the situation. Ultimately, I don't think that's actually necessary. But our goal is to help them develop more of a descriptive and nuanced take on the situation, which is often, again, it's this necessary fundamental that needs to be built like a scaffold in order for them to develop more effective options. So that would be the third step. What options do you think might work? What have you tried in these situations previously? Who else do you know who's good at dealing with these kind of challenges? What would they do in these kind of situations? What advice would you give to somebody else who's going through this kind of thing? Of course, depending on the relationship, we might do this more formally or more informally, like, what do you reckon would work? Or, you know, given this is a high-stakes project, it's particularly important that the two of you can find a way to repair a working relationship, at least to make sure that we're not falling behind on the decision-making processes. So what do you need to do and what do you need from them so that this situation doesn't continue moving forward? So sometimes I'm quite formal and quite like, this needs to change. What do you need to do about this? Other times, if it's just two of my friends, I might be like, far out, that sounds full on. What do you reckon might work? Or what have you tried? Or what have you thought about doing? That kind of thing. So I like that coaching approach, the goal, the reality, the options. And then the final step is that we ask questions around the way forward. So given all of that, what do you think would help? What's the next step from here then? Okay, so when's the next meeting that you've got scheduled? What do you need to do in the meantime to prepare for that one? So I'm shifting the conversation towards actions, towards next steps, and towards them doing something. I particularly find this helpful because it stops the conversation getting stuck in the intellectual spot where they've decided what needs to happen and what the other person needs to do, but they haven't actually committed to doing anything. So given all of that, what's your next step? It's a really nice way of just framing the conversation end towards, I'm expecting that you're going to need to do something about this here. And it might be that they just say, I need to give it some thought or I need to reflect on the options. And again, we can decide then how to respond if that's the case. We might say, sure, but we can't let it sit around indefinitely. Would it be all right if maybe we discuss it when we meet again next week? Or could I give you a call later in the week and just find out where your head's at? Or sometimes it's just like, yeah, fair enough, you know, give it some thought and then we just let it go. And then the final step is considering options for putting in place boundaries. I think a lot of the time we're stuck in the middle of conflict between two colleagues, we're probably, at least in the short term, going to be dealing with people who are both unhappy. Now, this might mean that they lash out at you unfairly, like they're just irritable and rude and grumpy. It might mean that you need to walk on eggshells and you're particularly careful about the way you're communicating with these people. Or maybe their expectations on you would change. They expect you to be available to debrief and have an open door policy, for example. And that might be something that you're prepared to do in the short term, but there would reach a point where it's not okay anymore. Like, I can't spend half of every workday listening to you complain about the other person. For me, though, I tend to put those boundaries in place, I think, when someone's just complaining about someone else pretty early. I don't necessarily agree that it's good for people to have a chance to vent and have a chance to have their say. I don't necessarily think that it's helpful for every feeling to be voiced and acknowledged and given some sort of precedent and put on a pedestal, so to speak. I appreciate that people are probably experiencing all sorts of feelings and different situations will be stressful. But for me, the focus should be on, well, what's going on here? Like, what's the reciprocal patterns and which of those are constructive or destructive? And what needs to happen moving forward? And that might be, what do I need to do to support you both? Or it might be, what do one or both of you need to do? So for me, that's often the focus of the conversation. And if they want to divert from that, if you know what I mean, like, these are the guardrails that I'm putting in place. And if they want to go off the path and venture into the, well, what do you think about them anyway? Like, haven't you found them to be a complete idiot? Or I'm sure you don't like working with them either. Or whatever it is that they're trying to suck you into, or they just want to keep whinging and keep repeating themselves. I normally say, yeah, you've explained that to me and I think I understand where you're coming from. I'm not sure how helpful it will be to continue to focus on the things that they've done though. Maybe we could think about some options for you responding, or even if you decide not to communicate with them in the short term, what do you need to do to manage the stress of all of this and keep your head above water? Because it does sound like a really tough spot to be. So I do it in an empathetic kind of way. Like, I can fully appreciate that for you, this is a really hard situation to be in, but I don't give the impression that I'm prepared to listen to endless whinging. It's like, for me, it seems like this would be helpful for you to think about what you need to do to even just create distance from the other person at the moment, or give yourself some space, or whatever it is that they sound like they're wanting. So that means I'm probably going to need to interrupt them. I'm going to need to say no and disappoint them, deliver bad news. And I'm probably going to need to deal with some level of fallout, even if it's just that they give me a frustrated look on their face and turn around and walk away without saying goodbye. And I'll be sitting there feeling a little bit stressed. I should expect that. Of course, I'll feel stressed. I've just told one of my colleagues no and giving them bad news. It doesn't mean that I've done the wrong thing. So I need to be really careful not to, I guess, go with this compulsion that a lot of us have to keep everybody happy. And watch out for desperation. If the conflict is increasing, what might happen is that the people involved have an escalated fight or flight type of response, and they might become desperate. And it can be like someone who's drowning and they'll grab you under. It's like, as the stress increases, or the perceived stress from the people that are involved, they tend to lose sight of the consequences of their behavior. So their behavior might become increasingly erratic, or they might overstep boundaries that they normally wouldn't, like interrupting or yelling in a team meeting or showing up late or missing a deadline or not responding to the other person just because they're so annoyed with them or something like that. And you might need to be really careful to distance yourself from some of those behaviours, because although the person involved in the conflict has lost sight of the consequence, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no consequence for them. You might need to punish them, or they might still be punished in some way. So I think, honestly, the right kind of support that we can offer in those kind of situations is boundaries. It's to say, like, I can appreciate your motivation, and given the fact that you're in this stressful situation, I can see how you're experiencing it all and why you think this would help or this would work. But no, I'm not prepared to do that. Or right now I need to focus on this. Or for me, what I'm planning to do is this. And you can decide what you need to do given all of that. So that neutral language of saying it, that's not something I can agree to, that's not something I can do, that's not something I can commit to. And I would give a very vague general reason, given the fact that I need to go on working with both of you. And right now I need to make sure that I'm not getting over-involved in this situation, given it really does concern the two of you. So that would be the final thing to think about. What are the appropriate boundaries that you might need to put in place? How would be the best way to do that? What do you need to do to plan and prepare? And what do you need to do to almost prepare for disappointing the other people if that's a situation that you think might come about as a result of you saying no? So I hope that has been helpful for you, thinking about some of those options for supporting your colleagues who are dealing with conflict, particularly when you're stuck in the middle. If you've got any feedback about this episode, an idea for a future episode, a question about something that I've covered, you can get in touch. And the best way to do that, again, is by email. It's podcast@simongood.com. Well, thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you again in a future episode of the Conflict Skills Podcast. Bye for now.